our resident goaltending expert. It's Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine and, of course, NHL.com, talking Canucks as well. Mr. Woodley, how are you? It's been a week.
I'm good. And you know what? The only good thing about the pandemic, and there are not very many good things, is the fact that I actually haven't been on the ice now for an entire calendar year, pretty much like to the day. So when you introduce me as a goaltending expert, there's actually no recent evidence that people would laugh and say, yeah, right. So including most of my beer league teammates when they hear comments like that. So that's the positive.
Apparently in Vancouver, when you do your hits, you're like, boy, that guy sounds like you, but you haven't seen him play, have you?
No, you don't get that here. I got to sign up for my beer league under a false name so nobody can look up the stats.
Wevin Cudley. Okay. Let's start in Calgary. It wasn't by design, and it probably was after abandoning an original plan that had him playing more, but David Rittich did get some action for the Calgary Flames in the last week. Solid performances in Toronto and some ups and downs in Ottawa, but four starts in 5.5 days at one juncture. What have you made of the Czech puck stopper that really he only got two starts in the first 16 games and suddenly he's started the last five?
Yeah, and therein probably lies the problem, right? And we talked about that and talked about it a couple weeks now where, you know, hindsight's easy, but I said it before they went into that Vancouver series. You needed to find a way to get David Rittich to play more. He was great in Toronto, probably going a little bit almost on just instinct and adrenaline. And when you're getting pounded like that on the shot clock, it's almost easier, right? Like, you're not thinking. You're just going out and playing. And you saw a few moments in Ottawa where maybe the brain turned on a little bit too much. And, some obviously regrettable decision with the puck in that one. But for the most part, I'm kind of torn here. Like, he was great in Toronto, and yet if the narrative coming out of that was like, we're back as a team, like that was, those were goalie wins, right? Like, there still seems to be a lot of issues when I watch this team that really don't have much to do with the goaltending. And that said, I think it's fair to say that when you look around the league and how teams have handled tandems, there's probably a lesson here. You know, and hey, the Oilers learned it the hard way. Like, this is the hard part here. Everything is so tight and you have to win, right? Like, the pressure is immense. Unless you're the Maple Leafs, you can go roll out your third and fourth stringers and not worry about it right now because they built such a cushion. But everybody else is in a dogfight. And so when you get a goaltender on a hot streak, like Jacob Markstrom was early in the season, like Mike Smith was just a week ago, the temptation is to just keep pounding them out there and not look long-term. And I really think that's the wrong thing to do this season. You have to find a balance so that, you know, you don't end up with a hurt Markstrom after playing seven in a row and David Rittich having to play 4 and 5, right? Like, that's just not ideal. So when both are healthy, I hope they find a little bit of a better balance there. I think I'd look to Winnipeg as the way they've done things. Like, Connor Hellebuck's your Vezina Trophy winner. Laurent Brossoit is clearly your number two. And yet there are times when Helly's been playing well that they've gone to Brossoit because they look at the schedule and that's the plan. That's how they figure they get the best out of both of them, rather than we need our best guy at his best to have a chance to win tonight. The Canucks, Edmonton went the other way. Mike Smith got on a heater. They kept rolling him out there. Mikko Koskinen got some time to work with the goalie coach, played two excellent games. But as it got into that fourth and fifth start in a row for Mike Smith, and he wanted to keep the net, you've seen that there in Calgary when Mike Smith's going, he wants to keep playing, and he can ask for that and almost insist upon it at times in his career. I would have argued you needed to go back to Koskinen sooner. So you waited a little longer, and you lost Mikko in the process. So I'm not saying it's easy. It's a tough act. Vancouver, they went the other way this week. They had back-to-backs. Thatcher Demko has clearly established himself as the number one goaltender here. But they had back-to-backs, and now they play every second day going forward for a while. And Demko had a shutout, his first career one in Winnipeg on the first end of the back-to-back. A little bit of momentum for a team that desperately needs it. They go to Braden Holtby the next night. He gives up four, and they are not only are they all over Holtby here in Vancouver, but they're all over the decision. And the problem is, if we're in a – everything's win, got to – you know, every last ounce out of this team every night – then, I guess you would have gone with Thatcher Demko on back-to-back nights and just kept pounding him 3 and 4 against Toronto coming in here this week, who's killing everyone. Like, but you have to look bigger picture. You have to look that, like, listen, Demko's a developing goaltender we want to turn into a number one long term, so beating the crap out of him right now, maybe not the way to go. And so they're getting hammered for that decision here, and yet when you talk to them about the reasons for it, Thatcher Demko never even went on the ice that day. He'd been on the ice pretty much every day except the mandatory day offs, either working on his game or getting ready to play for, like, I think it was over 3 weeks straight. When they didn't give him the start in Winnipeg, they said, just stay back at the hotel. Like, just do your stretching, do your work, do your physical work, but today's an off day. You're not going on the ice. And then yesterday was a mandatory day off. You have to manage these guys in that manner. You can't just keep pounding them out there. And, you know, I look to Winnipeg, and as much as Vancouver's hard to hold up as an example because of results, like, long-term, Thatcher Demko is going to be better for it, and they're going to get 100% Thatcher Demko against the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight rather than a 80% Demko in the second of back-to-backs and potentially a 70% Demko by the time they drop the puck tonight. So yeah, you really do have to manage those things, and it's unique situation to situation, but as tempting as it can be to ride the hot hand because every win matters, if one win now costs you two or three down the line, then you're probably not approaching it the right way, right?
Yeah, and I was talking about exactly this earlier today with someone off the air, and the thought is, like, of course points are important, of course wins are important, of course, you know, this is a results-based business, but let us not lose sight. What is most important for these hockey clubs is to have their number one goaltender in a spot where they're ready to go on a long stretch in mid-May when the playoffs begin, correct?
There's that, too. Absolutely, absolutely. And it's a weird year because the numbers are all different, right? What's the perfect amount of starts? You know, we've gotten into the point where, like, you know, even for the elite goaltenders, 50 is sort of that number. Like, a lot of guys tell me 50, 55. I don't know what that prorates to. I'm bad at math. In a 56-game season, but even if you were to just do a straight prorate, like, I don't think that's fair because the season's more condensed, right?
And like, travel's different too, right? Year. You can play it both ways. Like you're, if you're sitting in the same city for 5 days, that's different than being on the charter four times and getting in at 3 a.m. different cities. Like, everything's different this year. You cannot simply prorate a number from last year or years prior, right?
Yeah, and yet for some guys, it seems like the mental challenge of sitting in that same city and not having anything to do is a big part of it. So I do think there's a lot of factors this year that are just, like, everybody's learning as they go. But I think the common denominator in terms of making the right decision is sort of balancing that need for rest. Like, I said this going into this year. I thought most teams would need to go three deep in net. Like, you had to look at your where you were and be ready to go three deep. I think the Leafs are a prime example right now. Because of the workload, this is not the year to ride a workhorse number one. You need to have balance. And we liked the Flames' balance going into the season, but it just felt a little bit like, hey, and again, I get it. It was his old team, and he wanted to keep getting rolled out there, and he was playing great, and he was their best player. How do you bench your best player? But, you know, sometimes long-term, you got to look long-term as opposed to short.
We've gone 8 minutes without talking about the Montreal Canadiens. That's my fault. What the hell is going on with Montreal, and where's the end game here for both Marc Bergevin and Carey Price, who doesn't necessarily seem to be, I don't know, thriving in, a decade in one of the hottest media markets in hockey?
Yeah, no, like, he's, like, again, we had this discussion a little bit, I think, last week. Like, you know, and I read articles this week. Like, I read articles in Montreal. Carey Price hasn't been good for 4 years. Like, he hasn't been Carey Price for 4 years. I'm like, oh my God, 2 years ago, there was only one goalie in the NHL better, and he won the Vezina. Like, I feel like I have to preface this every time because every other market seems to have their head planted firmly up their ass on this one. Carey Price should have been a Vezina finalist in 2018-19, okay? So it's not like he hasn't been good for 4 years, but he hasn't been good this year. In fact, he's been bad. And looking at some of the goals and looking at some of the statistical trends, a couple of the ones, one is new and one has been a couple of years now. The one that's been a couple of years is screens. His numbers on screens have been well below average, and they're way below average this season. Like, he's double-digit screen goals this year at a time when he probably should have given up maybe three based on the math. I do think that's one part of his game when you look at, you know, making a goalie coach change, something as dramatic as that mid-season. I mean, that's pretty rare. The Oilers are the only other team in 2014 that I remember doing that. But that's something that's going to have to change. Carey's a guy who likes to look low and wide around screens. So you'll see him sort of drop into almost a save stance, sort of cut at the waist, hunched over, and he'll try to find lanes left or right of the bodies in front of him. And Carey's movement always sort of allowed him to get away with that because he could move from what for a lot of guys would be a low locked-in position. Once they get into that stance, you know, their mobility is quite limited. Their ability to gain rotation and movement and arrive square is quite limited. Those are some of the things that we've always talked about making Carey a human DVD how to goalie film. Like, he did that well. But now, I just don't think, especially as they, like, they put a bunch of oak trees in front of him on his own team, right? Like, they went to this sort of, you know, Mark Bergevin said it, almost like a St. Louis Blues model of defense, including a former St. Louis Blue. And now all of a sudden you've got opponents throwing traffic in there and you've got teammates that are in your way and they're bigger and it's harder to look around them because they're so big. And so I do think he's going to have to maybe make some adjustments in terms of how he manages traffic, going to have to use, because he's not a small goaltender by any stretch. He's going to have to use some of that size to maybe find windows over shoulders rather than around waists. And get better sight lines on those pucks. So that's one, and that's 2 years old. That's a two-year trend, and maybe something that, you know, somebody whispered to Mark Bergevin needed to change, and they didn't see that technical change being made. The other one is just clean shots, Ryan, like from distance, clean looks, 40 feet, going in short side, and that's where, you know, and it's hard for me to rip on it because when he was in the playoff bubble and so good last year, 936 in the 10-game playoff bubble run, like, there was an aggression to his game we hadn't seen. I use the word assertive because it was sort of a controlled aggression. Positionally, outside the blue, challenging guys, like, and just all over pucks. His aggression now has sort of left him drifting a little bit. Like, and it's such a fine line because we praised him for it in the bubble. And now, if you were to look at it, you're like he's positionally sloppy. He's getting caught because he's too far out to one side. And he's cheating away from that side, and then the guy beats him to the side he's cheating away from. Like, I've never seen that type of anticipation cheat in Carey that I can remember. I have seen the aggression. This was a trend early in his career. Once a year, he'd go on this run where he would get hyper-aggressive. As a matter of fact, it's why they brought in Steph Waite, because the previous goalie coach, Pierre Grew, who's now with the Ottawa Senators, he could see that Carey was being too aggressive. He could see the drift in his game. He could see that it was a problem, but he couldn't get him to rein it in quick enough. And so they brought in Waite fresh off two cups with the Blackhawks because he had sort of the gravitas, the authority, the recent success to dictate a little more and to get Carey to just do what he told him to do. Sounds like 7 years later, some of that had waned. And so they need a new voice. And I'm fascinated to see how this goes, Ryan, because Sean Burke was a hell of a goalie coach. He had a lot of success. He's had other offers to be a goalie coach since he left that role to pursue management. Uh-huh. And I'm curious to see how this goes because he's good at it, but it's not something he wanted to do per se. But also, it's a massive philosophical difference. His approach is more like Mike Smith and Henrik Lundqvist, goal line out, Benoit Lair disciple, and Stefan Waite was very much outside in, aggression and then retreat with the play, and those are two very different philosophies on goaltending. Mm-hmm. And changing that philosophy on your number one goaltender midseason, that's interesting.
Well, and I think it's even just him taking that job, I mean, would I be crazy to suggest that maybe he thinks this could lead to a management position, given how unstable things have been in Montreal? I mean,
well, I don't want to put, I mean, Sean's a guy that we've had on the podcast that when he was scouting for the Canadiens and he was in town, I learned something every time I talked to him in the press box. Like, he's got a really great mind for the game and goaltending. I don't want to try and read into, you know, him looking to, you know, for his future and a job and replacing Bergevin. And I think that's, you know, that's for others to do. Certainly not anything I've heard from him.
Right.
But it is worth noting that he was already under contract to the team in a different role,
okay,
in an advisory role and in a scouting role. So in terms of taking a job he'd kind of, you know, shied away from before, like, they were already paying him, so to speak. So, and the interesting thing too is they didn't call it goalie coach, right? They called it director of goaltending. So much like we praise the Calgary Flames, and as much as Sean's going to be on the ice in a goalie coaching role when he gets there 2 weeks from now, that's the other interesting part. Like, you're going to have three voices over a span of just over 2 weeks for Carey Price. Steph Waite, Marco Marciano in the AHL moving up from the AHL for the next 2 weeks while Sean's in quarantine, and then Sean. So that's odd too. But you know, for Burke, it's maybe it's a chance to be one of those directors of goaltending and be on more of the management side. Maybe this is a you coach and get us through this year, but next year you're in a director role if everyone survives this season and there isn't a huge blow up in Montreal, and you can pick your goalie coach and you can build a department like Jordan Sigalet is doing in Calgary, like Roberto Luongo is doing in Florida, like Brian Decourt is doing in Arizona. You know, certainly it may just be part of fitting that trend with a guy who's obviously well-versed in the position and was already under contract in your organization.
That's a lot of money they're spending on net mining. $14.85 million in Montreal. Next year, the cap hit for Jake Allen goes down. He signed an extension that's a little friendlier on AAV, but gives him, I guess, some form of security, as much as you can have in a year with an expansion draft.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's a pretty good contract for an expansion team, isn't it?
Yeah, but at this point, like, let's not fool ourselves. The people that spend thousands of dollars a game wagering like the Canadiens a lot more when Jake Allen's a starter than they do when Carey Price is a starter. Like, is there an absolutely firm conclusion that happens at the end of the season, or is this very much in the air? Is this going to be easy to negotiate? Is this a very difficult conversation to have? I mean, how do they approach expansion if Price doesn't return to Vezina-type form?
I think that discussion depends on who's leading it. I mean,
so
as we
Mark
see all these moves,
else?
Right, is Mark Bergevin the guy? Because I like Mark Bergevin, and this press conference yesterday is probably the most doubt he's cast in Carey's direction since he got there, right? This is his contract. He has backed him every step of the way. Yesterday was sort of the most doubt, the most critical he's sort of been, and the most sort of open he's been about, you know, the decline. And again, like I said, 2 years ago, it wasn't as bad as a lot of people seem to make it out. But So if Bergevin's there, I cannot see it happening. But, you know, I said as soon as Seattle got the franchise, you know, we had a discussion about, you know, who's going to be their Marc-Andre Fleury. And my answer was, well, what about Carey? Like, at what point does he tire of the focus and the spotlight?
He's sick of that media. I can tell you that.
Yeah, there's no question, and like the lifestyle, like this guy, I've told this story before. Like this is not just like the spotlight. There is different, and especially on that position, like he doesn't like his buddy has to close the store after hour and wait till after hours to let him in to go to the sporting goods store, right? Like there is no normal life there for him.
Can't get a coffee.
What's that?
You can't even go and get a coffee, right? Like, that's the difference between Calgary and Montreal.
There's,
in Calgary, they recognize you, but you can get your coffee. In Montreal, you can't even get your coffee.
No, and in Seattle, like, a dream scenario. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to overdo this because who knows. But, you know, your wife's from Washington State. That's where he spent in Eastern Washington State, where in Tri-City, where he played junior hockey. That's where he spends most of his offseason anyways. Like, you know, there was a lot of things, even when, as soon as Seattle got the team that we sort of speculated might fit, but that was just a fun little horse around exercise. I think the way things are going, you know, as long as he's open to it, because if I'm not mistaken, there's a no move in that contract, it could be a fascinating discussion. And you know, his willingness to waive, I mean, when you look at all those aspects, like a fresh start and yet, as casual as he is, and when things are going good, this is the irony, right? Like, when things are bad, it's like, well, he doesn't look like he's trying. And this has been right back to when it was him and Jaro Halak and that debate. Like, when things are going bad, it's like that casualness is he doesn't look like he's trying. When things are going good, it's what we praise him for. Like, look at just how, like, his ability to sort of never get out of control, to always look calm, to, you know, not get overly worked up by things. Make no mistake, like, this guy is a competitor and has a lot of desire, and I think a desire to be the guy that ultimately leads that city and that team back to the Stanley Cup, you know, glory of the yesteryears that you're always compared to. But man, a get-out-of-jail-free card, a chance to go to the Pacific Northwest where he always loves his off seasons, and frankly regrets leaving every summer, stays longer and longer, and goes back to Montreal later and later. Like, he loves it out here. It would be a great fit. Mm-hmm. So I have a tough time seeing him saying no to that opportunity if it were to come. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're just sort of throwing darts here. And, yeah. You know, a couple of years ago, it was sort of just a, hey, well, what if? You know, I think that what if, given the way things have gone this year, certainly becomes more of a, you never know, it could actually happen.
Great chatting. We've got some items to get to next week that we haven't touched, and that's because you do such a good job and you're so thorough on the topics we have touched.
You mean
really
I never
fascinating
shut
stuff
up.
In Montreal. You never finish the list. That always means there's more for next week. We'll talk then.
Lots of good stuff. Thanks, Ryan.
Kevin Woodley of InGoal Magazine.